Tuning in the station. Welcome to the station, the Babylon 5 podcast.
All right, and welcome to the station, episode 3, Born to the Purple.
And by the way, sorry it's been so long, everyone. We just wanted to try it out and see if we were any good at this. And then the holidays came, and now we're back. And thanks to everyone who's downloaded it. Thank you for your feedback. We appreciate the enthusiasm. Once again, I am Steve.
I'm Mitch.
And we are good to go.
All right. Born to the Purple was the first really good episode. It was written by Larry DiTillo and directed by Bruce Seth Green, and it includes one of my favorite lines from the entire series.
Would that be, what do you want, you moon-faced assassin of joy?
No, actually, it's Talia's, is he serious?
Yeah, we're going to get to that later. Why exactly is it that a telepath would need to find out if someone's serious when they said something? Exactly. If they earn their money by detecting whether or not somebody's being honest, why would they have to ask? You know what I think it is, actually? I think it's, you know, she must have had her hair bleached just before going on, you know, peroxide seeps in and interferes with telepathic abilities, I think.
That must be it.
What's funny is that we find Londo in a strip club. As the opening scene, he's in a strip club. All right, and then the commander of the station and the ambassador from the Narn regime will wander into this strip club to start trying to talk business with Londo. I think that's awesome.
And what do? They all sit down
and watch the strippers.
And then we get introduced to the wonderful Kodath.
Oh, well, we get introduced to Adira first, so yeah.
But then,
then Kodath wanders in, and oh, Lord. Who plays Kodath? Do you have that written down?
Of course, Mary Warrenoff. Mary was also on Murder, She Wrote, Highlander, Mrs. Columbo. She was also part of Andy Warhol's entourage back in the 1960s. She only did one episode, and I do believe that that was more than enough.
Kodath just was not a very accessible character. She just was too much of a bitch.
I don't know if it was the character or the actress. I'm still not sure.
You know, generally, I can find redeeming qualities in the way that a character is written, and sometimes the performance doesn't do it justice. I had that complaint against Michael O'Hare, to be honest with you, sometimes. But in any event, we had Kodath wander into the scene.
Yeah, I don't know what she adds. She doesn't really add anything. I much prefer Natoth, first Natoth. We'll get to the second Natoth later, but yeah. Kodath just didn't ever work for me. But she comes in while they're all oogling the women, including Adira. Adira is a female Centauri, and we find out that she is a slave owned by Trachis.
She's kind of a jerk, isn't it?
Yeah.
I want one of those gloves that he has, though. That glove where it fries anybody he touches.
Uh-huh. We saw that again. Back Bureau 13 was using those kind of gloves.
Bureau 13?
You don't remember that from Spider in the Web?
You know, this... Nope. It's out of my jurisdiction.
Yeah. Spider in the Web, second season. The glove comes back when a guy that was part of Free Mars comes along and he's ordered to kill Adira and kill other people, and he uses this glove that has all these sparkly, glowy things.
Hmm.
It comes back.
Cool. All right, so we move on to Molari's quarters. Let's see, what do we got here?
What do we have here?
Yeah, okay. I'm looking at my notes, and they're not as detailed as I would have liked. But anyway, okay, so we're back in Molari's quarters.
You've got 72 pages of notes, single-spaced, on one episode, and they're not detailed enough for you.
No, they're not. I can tell you every detail about everything, but where exactly to find it?
You can tell me details. Okay, I've got a detail for you. What happens with the jewel that Londo gives her?
What happens with it?
Yeah. Where does it go between shots?
It goes back into the little box. That's where it goes.
No, it moves from one side to the other and then back again.
Well, that's why it's so valuable.
Right.
Okay. Okay, we're off to a running start here.
Absolutely. Okay, so we've got Born to the Purple. Basically, it's negotiations.
Mm-hmm.
We've got negotiations between Londo and Jakar, between Londo and Jakar. We don't ever know what the heck the Euphrates Treaty really is.
It's obviously some kind of a commerce treaty. It's a trade negotiation.
Why is it obviously anything? All we know is that there's some negotiations that never seem to happen. They never take place.
Okay. Well, I was under the impression that it was some kind of trade agreement because there's not any open hostility going on between the Narn and Centauri at this point. There's tension. There's diplomatic tension, but there's no open hostility at this point. So I was just sort of under the impression that it was not a military or a strategic negotiation as such, more of a...
Possibly. But we never know with open hostilities between the Narn and the Centauri. The only time that there really isn't any kind of open hostility is when Jakar shows up in Londo's quarters as a female, but that's much later.
As a female?
Oh, you haven't read that script?
No. All right. So
Joe likes to play practical jokes on his people.
Yeah, I've noticed this.
There was an alternate draft of one of the scripts in season 4 where Jakar, who is decidedly male, undergoes a transformation and becomes female.
And goes to visit Londo?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, they get married.
Oh. I'm so glad that never went to film.
The crew thought it was. They thought it was real.
Oh, man.
It's great.
Okay.
But that's season 4.
Okay.
Okay, there's the Gold Channel. This is the first introduction of the Gold Channel. Mm-hmm. Gold Channel is used strictly for the ambassadors and for the upper hierarchy in station personnel to get back to Earth. There's this very specific channel that is not even known by most of the station's population, and it is currently being used. Garibaldi comes in and asks Susan, hey, do you know anything about this? She says, well, it must be a gremlin.
Right.
And it turns out through investigation that it's actually Susan who is using it to contact her father who is back on Earth.
He's very ill.
And dies at the end of the episode.
Right.
And Garibaldi sees her watching this as he dies and comes back and says, well, you're right. It was just a gremlin and I don't think it'll happen again.
Will it? Yeah. And I really liked that scene because it sort of lays the foundation for an actual sort of friendship between Ivanova and Garibaldi because, you know, back in the Midnight on the Firing Line, you know, it's kind of given away that Ivanova's new.
Mm-hmm.
She's there to do her job. She's there to just be very disciplined, very diligent, very serious about her work.
And she hates telepaths.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's a whole other story right there. But the thing I'm getting at here is that, you know, this actually sort of – this sort of subtext. I think it's really interesting how in the dialogue itself they're just, you know, yeah, you're right. This was just a computer error. This was nothing serious. But there's an entire other conversation that happens within the subtext where the truth is conveyed.
Mm-hmm.
And also sort of the foundation for an actual – friendly rapport between the two of them.
Yeah, towards the end of that particular little subplot, Garibaldi offers her a drink and she says, I'm on duty. And then says, but, you know, let's have a rain check on that. So we get the idea that there could be some kind of friendship later on. He understands what she is going through and she is mortally embarrassed by the entire idea that she has human feelings.
Right.
Up till this point, she has been
a robot.
Yeah. Her hair is completely stylized in one fashion. It is very severe.
Yeah.
And it's the same style that Lockley shows in season 5. Very severe, but then she is an Ivanova clone.
Yeah, just exactly. To skip ahead 5 years here.
Four.
Well, whatever. Lockley was just sort of Ivanova Jr.
Until Day of the Dead.
Yeah, until that episode. But we're going way ahead of ourselves here. We'll get to that episode eventually.
Yeah.
So, now, what else do we have to talk about with this episode here?
Well, there's quite a bit that we can talk about.
Yeah.
I'd like to talk about the cast, because okay. I always do. Fabiana Udenio, and I'm pretty sure I'm butchering that, plays Adira Turi. Mm-hmm. Her most famous part, other than Babylon 5, was playing a lot of vagina in Austin Powers. believe it or not, she only did 2 episodes of Babylon 5, and yet her – appearance is so dramatic that we remember it 4 years later in Day of the Dead, and we remember when she died because that jerk Morden. We've got Clive Revel, who is playing Trakis. He also played another genre role in Star Trek The Next Generation, the episode Cupid. He played Sir Guy of Gisborne. But more famously, in Star Wars The Emperor Strikes Back, he was Emperor Palpatine.
He was the voice of Emperor Palpatine. I looked into this. The part was performed by taking the eyes of a chimpanzee and superimposing them on the face of an old woman.
Right.
So, you know, that was the performance. But yes, he did the voice of Palpatine in that one scene as a hologram in Empire Strikes Back.
Right, until Lucas went back and did his stuff. Robert Phelan played Andrei Ivanov, and he comes back in the episode TKO. He also played Dr. Wynn in the original Halloween movie, and he's not had another credited role since TKO. I don't know if he is still with us or if he's retired from acting or gone on to another profession. Robert DiTilio played Norg. He is the brother of scriptwriter Larry DiTilio. Mike Norris plays a character called Butts. He is – I love that. He is the son of actor Chuck Norris.
I actually didn't realize that, but I put in here that one of the henchmen that were pursuing Londo and Sinclair looked like Chuck Norris.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay, that explains that then. That's because – I was going to make a joke about it, but I can't now because it's
right. He's the son of actor Chuck Norris. He does stunts and directing and composing, and Chuck Norris and Joe have worked together quite a few times. Uh-huh. Marianne Robertson plays Tech Number One, as usual. She's only played, like, two roles. She plays the tech in CNC, uh-huh. and she played the hostage in the alternate version of The Gathering. Those are the only two roles that she's played that are credited. She may have done other stuff. I don't know. Momo Yamisha plays Dr. Goyakin. She was also a crew member in Star Trek The Motion Picture.
Okay.
Christopher Rich, another crew member, played Miller Redfield on Murphy Brown, and she was Reba's ex-husband Brock on Reba. Huh. And then, of course, Mary Romanoff. Woronov, or however it's pronounced.
Yeah, I was trying to figure out if I've seen this Mary Woronov in a different series somewhere. I just, you know, I don't think I ever saw her in Murder, She Wrote because, you know, I didn't watch a whole lot of Murder, She Wrote.
I did.
Nothing against Angela Lansbury, I guess, but, you know, Murder, She Wrote just wasn't my cup of tea. My mom did.
How can you not love Angela Lansbury and Murder, She Wrote? Because, after all, she loves having a little bit of Priest.
I completely have no idea what you're talking about right now.
Sweeney Todd.
Sweeney. Oh. Uh-huh. Yeah,
she was the version on stage.
Yeah, we're looking over here at our producer, Jeff. Jeff, have you ever seen Sweeney Todd with Johnny Depp, the musical? He nods yes. It's pretty much the most gruesome musical I've ever seen.
You haven't seen Repo the Genetic Opera yet.
I guess not, but I said it's the most graphic one that I've ever seen. So.
Yeah, Sweeney Todd has just been out-graphicked by Repo the Genetic Opera. It took me like three times to get through that movie.
Is this new?
Yeah, it just came out on DVD a couple days ago.
Was it a direct-to-DVD?
It was released in some theaters, and apparently it's been a musical on stage for like 10 years or something. I had never heard of it, and then it came out, and Anthony Stewart Head, who was Giles on Buffy, was in it, so of course I had to go see it, or had to Netflix it anyway, and it's different.
Well, we'll have to get into that some other time because
we won't, or not.
You know, after I've seen it, we can come back and we can do an episode of that. Well, I did warn everybody listening. We're going to meander off into other realms of conversation. You see, because we have to, because Mitch knows so much more about these characters and these actors than I do that I have to think of something to talk about.
That's right.
So
we could talk Doctor Who.
No, I'm completely in the dark with Doctor Who. My sci-fi repertoire is Star Trek TNG, Star Trek Next Generation, Star Trek Deep Space Nine. I kind of tried to get into Voyager for a while. So Star Trek, yeah, sure. I like Star Trek. Babylon 5, of course, and Stargate. You know, that's pretty much where my sci-fi interest stops.
Really? You're forgetting Dead Like Me?
Dead Like Me wasn't sci-fi, though. Dead Like Me was just awesome.
Yeah, and it has a new direct-to-DVD movie coming out within the next month.
Yeah,
finally.
But I'm upset about the fact that George's sister's being played by someone else.
No, she's not.
Which one is? George's mother? Who?
No, the Daisy is being played by
Daisy. Okay.
Daisy, Daisy, give me your answer. Anyway. Okay. There you go. Now you have had music. You've been entertained. And I think we're going to call it quits for this episode. Next up will be Infection, episode number 4.
Okay.
And we're out of here. Yep. This is Mitch on the station.
This is Steve on the station.
And we're out.
The Station podcast was recorded and produced and edited by Jeff Finn at Infinite Productions in 2009. The Station.